Welcome back. I'm your host, Manon Sabir, and this is The Grapevine. If it's moving through the community, then you heard it here first. Thanks to Ray and Shannon. Man, reporting on the last report. The last report was dynamic, talking about the podcast fest. And I got to tell you about a story. Yes, this is going to be good. This is about who gets to eat and what can they afford, and whether the last neighborhood grocer is standing and can keep standing. So beginning November 4th, stores that accept SNAP will have to carry seven different varieties of food in each of four categories. Y'all listen to this. Protein, grains, dairy, and fruits and vegetables. That's at least 28 varieties. 28 varieties and 84 individual stocking units. I'm going to repeat that. Beginning November 4th, stores that accept SNAP will have to carry seven different varieties of food in each of the four categories: proteins, grains, dairy, fruits, and vegetables. My phone line is open. I'm going to tell you this real quick because we need to make sure y'all understand. You can call in the Truth Radio 1017-833-212-1017. Let me know what you think about this. Beginning November 4th, stores that accept SNAP will have to carry seven different varieties of food in each of the four categories: proteins, grains, dairy, fruits, and vegetables. That is approximately 28 different varieties and 84 different stocking units. The USDA, get this. The USDA says the rule puts food first. The argument is simple. If a store accepts taxpayer-funded food benefits, customers should have the access to actual staple foods, not just soda, candy, and different snacks. Now, that's been a concern for a lot of people. That's been a concern for a lot of folks, an enormous amount of people who are on SNAP, and they go to the grocery store or they go to these smaller grocers, corner stores included, and these corner stores in particular don't carry or aren't required to carry the mineral and nutrient-based foods that they need in order to survive, period. So, but a gentleman that I know is doing the work in our community, especially around food apartheid, food emergency, food, if you want to call it for your, you know, archaic vision, food deserts. Maurice Wentz, the owner of the Sherman Park Grocery Store, he says in a report that just came out. He says that small stores operate, and this is true, small stores do operate on razor-thin margins and also budgets. The more inventory, and he is right, the more inventory, there's more vendor costs, more refrigeration, storage, spoiled food if customers don't purchase fast enough. So if you are familiar with the Sherman Park Grocery Store, the Sherman Park Grocery Store is on Fond du Lac and Sherman and Fond du Lac. Please visit and talk to Maurice Wentz, the owner of the Sherman Park Grocery Store. When grocery costs go up, where do those costs go? And we know all too well where those grocery costs go. We know whenever you have something brand new in your grocery store, you got to stock it. And when you stock it, you got to have the proper storage, and it has to be displayed properly. And if it's not displayed properly, a lot of times it can either go bad and or you can be fined for it. So for you know, for Mo, a person like that, and or these smaller grocery stores, they have a lot, they have work to do, because there will be violations if they don't adhere to these SNAP rules. And this is beginning November 4th. So I almost understand that they are concerned. But what do you all think? What do y'all think? Tell me what bothers you, because large grocery chains and pharmacies have been disappearing from our neighborhoods, from Black neighborhoods, for years. But in the last 2.5 to 3 years, our spending habits, we have been inundated with disinvestment, and it's taking a toll on us. It's taking a huge toll on us. They study our spending habits. They collect our money, then decide our neighborhoods are no longer profitable, no longer profitable enough to serve. But when a Black-owned grocery store stays, when a gentleman by the name of Maurice Mo Wentz puts his name, his money, and his reputation on the line, suddenly we just discover another set of rules has to be absorbed. My belief is our families deserve fresh, healthy food, bar none. Our families deserve fresh, healthy food, bar none. This is not, you have to, we know this. This is not anything new. But you can't demand more inventory without asking whether the neighborhood store has the capital, has the refrigeration, the shelf space, and customer volume to carry it. Like you have to put people in the door. So this is a part of a program, part of a government that often misses. A rule can sound equal on paper and still hit a small neighborhood store very differently than it hits Walmart. Walmart, y'all know Walmart. Wally's World we already know with Walmart, things happen, man. Things happen. They have grown tremendously since they started, and they will take over a neighborhood, and then ultimately, when they're not making enough money, they'll leave it. They will leave it, and you know that's a part of you know commerce, especially in America. The USDA says this about nutrition. Mo Wentz said, and Maurice Wentz says it could rise and raise costs for families who can least afford it. Let me say that again. Mo Wentz, our neighborhood Sherman Park grocer, says it could raise costs for families who can least afford it. And I think both things can be true. The question is, are we willing to help small stores meet the actual standard? Are we willing to help small stores meet the actual standard? Are we going to just regulate them out of the neighborhoods that need them? We got to think about it. We have to think about it. We have to think about it. This is my question to everybody. Are we willing to help these small stores, or are we going to just, you know, push them out of the neighborhood? This is a real fight, I think, that is not going to end for a while. You have to remember what I said earlier. The USDA says this about nutrition, that it could raise costs for families who can least afford it. This is very serious. We're living in a time where a city, we're living in a time where a city can quite possibly, you know, we're living in a time where we are, we're in trouble. We're in trouble, man. It's just plain and simple. We are in trouble. So hopefully our communities can connect each other, because we have a number of different communities, smaller micro communities here in Milwaukee, and all of them are experiencing similar issues around nutrition and affordability, and also disinvestment. And when we're facing that, the role of people like Mo Wentz and his voice is for him to speak out on this and say that this is going to be a problem, because the margins are already razor thin. We're going to find out that not only are the margins razor thin, but it's going to force a lot of people out of the market. A lot of people like him, a lot of mini grocers out of the market. I'm sure there's pretty much some more mini grocers in the market. This is very serious. When we return, we're going to talk about Head Start. We're going to pivot to Head Start. We're talking about rules written far away that land directly on our families. It's another major proposal that dropped today, and we're going to talk about Head Start. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. Welcome back to The Grapevine. I'm your host, Manon Sabir of The Grapevine. We're picking some more grapes. And I'm glad you are back, because we were just talking about neighborhood food and what we can do with it. Shout out to Sherman Park Neighborhood Grocery Store on Sherman and Fond du Lac. Y'all doing your thing. You holding tight. Please hold tight. We don't forget about you. You guys go ahead and visit Mo Wentz over at Sherman Park Neighborhood Grocery Store, and make sure that you shop there regularly. He has what you need, and if he doesn't, make sure you request it. Make sure you request it, because this is important. If we are not shopping with our mini grocery stores, then we are doing them a disservice. Please go over there and shop with them as much as we possibly can. Shout out to Mo Wentz. Mo, if you listen, call in. You're more welcome to call in and promote your business, man. We love to hear from you, straight up. And a lot of times, people that are listening, maybe even new listeners, so you are more than welcome to call in any period of time. So before I left, I started talking about Head Start and its new overhaul, its new government overhaul. I don't know if you're going to agree with the Trump administration on this or not, but you know, let's talk about it. The Head Start, they did a pivot. I don't know however many kids you have in your home and have been a part of Head Start, but I think 700,000 kids in the United States are affected and are going go through Head Start and have gone through Head Start in the last year. And you know, let's talk about it. So while we're talking about the rules written far away that land directly on our families, another major proposal had dropped today. And this, the federal government is proposing a major overhaul. They're a huge overhaul of Head Start. It's, and if you are not familiar with Head Start is a program that provides early education, meals, health services, and family support to hundreds of thousands of our children. And, you know, I know a few Head Start programs that do a really good job. Supporters say that removing federal mandates could cut bureaucracy, lower costs, and allow local programs to serve more children. But some of the advocates, the early childhood advocates, that they warn that the standards involve class size, staff to child ratio, health screenings, curriculum, and family services can be weakened and left to states with very different requirements. So they said this is a proposal. It's not final, but this, if it goes through, this will affect your child going into Head Start. The public has 60 days to comment. So if you do have a child that's in Head Start, make sure that you are, and or you have a niece, nephew, cousin, little sister, little brother that is in Head Start and going through Head Start, please look out for this particular proposal, because this can affect them and it also will affect you. Ultimately, these are long-term effects. One of the articles that I read about Head Start said that they're deregulating, but they're also, and they're bringing money in, but they're funding some parts and taking away the regulations that will allow kids to have, and the administration to have, kind of this, you know, I guess this box around special education, where a lot of our kids are affected. So we need to have a conversation. There has to be conversation. If you know anybody in Head Start, please give them a shout. This means your opinion does not have to stay inside your kitchen, though. It doesn't have to stay inside your group chat, your Facebook posts. You can put it right into the official federal record. So parents with disabilities may, and this is really close to my heart, parents with disabilities that have children with disabilities, because consistency in staffing and specialized support are not luxuries for some children, this may determine whether preschool actually works at all. But here's my question. When government says flexibility, do you hear freedom for local programs or permission to give children less? When government says flexibility, because when they give flexibility to a program, what I hear, I hear corruption for me. I hear like, man, you know what? Let's deregulate and push, give people money, give certain programs money. And then at the top, the people who are the administrators are lining their pockets underneath. I hear that. And I don't hear, once I hear that, it sends me a red flag. That means that, you know, people aren't saying this, but they're afraid of this. And in Head Start, we have so many children in Head Start that it almost tells me that this is going to be a little bit of a problem. This could be a little bit of a problem, maybe even a free-for-all for some people who are part of the Head Start program. But I'm not a part of the administration, but I would love to know what your opinions of this are. I don't know how many. I think there's like 1,600 Head Start programs in the United States right now. And depending on your zip code for Head Start, depending on where you are in that zip code, that's where you will be placed. So some zip codes will be placed in areas with higher funding, and some people within kind of the lower income zip codes will be placed in Head Starts with lower funding. That is the issue. The problem comes when you deregulate a specific system, where you deregulate the rules. Then you start to understand, okay, dang. Well, if they're deregulating and the people at the top are passing out this money, who's actually, you know, are certain people getting raises? Are certain people over here providing extra programs? You know, like, for example, there's a school. This is God's honest truth. There's a school in Chicago. It's called Frederick Douglass High School, and it has 1,000 seats. There are only 27 kids in that school. There are 28 teachers, 28 staff members, actually. And each child per year, the state of Illinois spends $93,500 on each child. $93,500 on each child in that school. And it only has 27 kids that go to this 1,000-seat school. So what are we doing in the Head Start program that can regulate all of this? Will Head Start programs in the rural areas get more money than the ones in the urban areas? I would like to know, Mr. Government. I would like to know. So y'all, listen up. I want to pivot a little bit because this is very important. August is National Black Business Month. August is National Black Business Month. There are approximately 3.1 million black-owned businesses. And congratulations to all the black-owned businesses here in America. But that comes to, I had an argument. Not an argument, maybe a discussion. Strong discussion. What do we really need to mention? Do we really need to mention that our businesses are black owned? Do we really need to mention that our businesses are black owned? Is it one of those? I was listening to Dr. Boyce Watkins, and he said he took a trip. He took a trip to wherever. You know, somewhere down south, and he went into a restaurant, and the restaurant was well run. He took a picture. It was nothing but like, it was probably like 80% white people, 20% black people. Let's just say it like that. And he walks in, and he didn't know that the business was a black owned business by a black family. And so afterwards he researches this business, and he finds out that it's a black owned business. And he mentioned that because you have a business doesn't mean that you have to label it black owned. It just means to be has to it he's saying he was saying that it just has to be well run. It has to be well run. That you are raking in the money from everybody, not just a black-owned business. But y'all tell me if y'all agree with this or not. Like, if you have a business, should you actually name this business black-owned or not? You know, like, I'm pretty sure that if you do have a black-owned business, that means that you're employing, you know, more than one person that is black. But are you then actually employing the rest of your staff as a black owned business? Are you employing those people that are black? You're not necessarily discriminating, but you're giving a little bias towards those individuals. I'm curious to know from some of the business owners, the black owned business owners, what you feel about this. Should your business actually be called black owned, or should you just have a business? And should you just be running it? When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about August being National Black Business Month. And should we continue to call our businesses black owned? When we come back in 3. Welcome back to The Grapevine. I'm your host, Manon Sabir. August is National Black Business Month, and there are approximately 3.1 million black-owned businesses in America. 3.1 million black-owned businesses in America. That's close to 200, and they generate close to $200 billion in sales. I mean, those are big numbers, man. Those are huge numbers. They employ, most of those black-owned businesses employ more than 1 million people. They generate more than $200 billion in sales. Every black business begins with somebody deciding to risk something, deciding to take their side gig, their side job, and make it into something that they can live on. They can do for people, serve a community. Every black business does that. They decide to risk their savings, their credit, you know, their sleep. Majority of people have stayed awake over and over and over again, wondering, a lot of them wonder whether or not they're going to make payroll. Whether or not they're going to make payroll. Take a look at Mo Wentz of the Sherman Park grocery store. I mean, you know that having margins in the grocery department, the grocery category in America, in Milwaukee, especially while Pick and Save and Century and some of those other places were thriving, to have that around you and still survive and still come out on top, that's a chart towards being amazing. But those cold nights where you don't know whether or not you're going to make it, whether or not you're going to have those sales, that's the hard part. So shout out to you. But somebody in that black-owned business opened their doors without knowing whether their own community would actually walk through those doors. And this is why having a black-owned business doesn't matter for me to say, man, my business is black-owned. Nah, it doesn't matter. Does not matter at all. Mm-mm. Not one bit. What matters for me in all of this is that not only are we looking at these individuals using their savings and their credit and staying awake all times of night, not knowing whether or not they're going to keep these doors open or not. That is the black challenge. That's the black-owned challenge, the black-owned business challenge. That's when you have individuals who are sacrificing completely who they are. Because, you know, it behooved me to say that I didn't have gray hair going into business. Man, listen, shoot. Gray hair, bald spots, all of that. But here's a challenge I want to give everybody. Here's a challenge I want to give everybody. In my grapevine challenge, move one purchase, not your whole life, not every dollar you own, just one purchase you already make every week. If you buy coffee, try to buy sustainable coffee, sustainable black-owned coffee, if you will. If you eat lunch out multiple times a week, guess what? Choose a couple black-owned restaurants. And if you are really conscious, a lot of people who are conscious of black-owned businesses will make suggestions to improve that particular business that they are patronizing. If you need grocery stores, visit the Sherman Park Grocery Mart. Get, and if they don't have what you need, man, guess what? Guess what you need to do? Guess what you need to do? You are, and you already know. Make it happen. If you need clothing, hair care, health care, child care, fitness care, legal help, graphic design, catering, look for somebody in our community that's providing it. That's providing. We even got great doctors and dentists. We got great we have great dentists here in Milwaukee. Fantastic dentists. But my challenge to you is do one purchase. Because if 10,000 Milwaukee residents move just $20 a week, that'll be $200,000 moving through Black-owned businesses. If 10,000 Milwaukee residents move just $20 a week, that will be $200,000 moving through Black-owned businesses. Y'all think about that. Al, what's up?
Well, you know, it's wonderful you saying that. Well, maybe you should tell these Black businesses, have some class and stop being ratchet and ghetto, because that's why a lot of them Black businesses don't last. It's not, hey, what's up? It's not having your country ignorant, down south relative who don't know how to talk, who want to act like his chest is all puffed out. People don't spend their money for that. Or tell them if mama got an attitude and her eyebrows go to the back of her crown, she should not be on the register nor answering the phone. And furthermore, when it comes to Black businesses, why keep saying you're a Black business? I feel like you limit yourself. You dumb yourself down, because it's like saying, I only want Black money. You want all money. And this is not the 70s and 80s. Everybody don't do word by mouth no more. And you got to open up on time and stop closing before you're supposed to. People say, it's almost like when you say I'm a Black business, I want you to have pity on me and spend your money. How about run your business like a business? Advertise your business. Make sure everything in your business is top tier. If I'm a business, I'm not going to tell nobody I'm a Black business, because number one, this is Milwaukee. Black businesses can't survive off of Black money, because we're too personal. Sometimes we're too cheap, because they want like a $5,000 job for $200, or what they say, oh, if I got to pay that, I'm going to go to the white man. Well, ski, ski, scoot, scoot to the white man there. Just say you are a business and run it like a business. Open on time. Advertise. If I tell you I have a business, it's no guarantee you're going to tell somebody else I got a business. And we don't care if you're Christian. Okay, we got to stop doing that. Oh, they're Christian. That might make me not come to you at all. Your presentation and your delivery is top tier. Or they say, oh, well, you know, they're so-and-so or they're Christian. I don't care about all that. I want to know, is your business top tier? And we have been with the businesses where they say, oh, they're Christian. And they got their wife with the roller set who trying to be like all up in your face and don't know a ski, ski, school, school. From an oil tank to a spark plug. And what did I do? I took my business to somewhere else.
Wow.
So they have to hit the reset button. And then when they run their business like a business, then they be able to compete with the white people and do a consumer hostile takeover and take their business and bring it to your business.
That's deep, Al. I think you on point today. You on point. That's deep. Hey, look, I'm not going to lie. Al got a point, man. You have to run your business like it's supposed to be. The moment you put, it's almost a saying it's a Black-owned business doesn't mean that people will visit your business. And right now, what Al is saying is almost like a limit, almost like a barrier on your business. Because it's almost saying, like, it for me, it's almost saying that you are just catering to black folks. And right now, in this economy where 500,000 black men lost their jobs in 2025, and 250,000 black women lost their jobs in 2025 due to this administration's output and input, we have to realize as a community that we have to galvanize, our standards and raise them. We have to galvanize our businesses and raise the businesses. We have to galvanize the people and raise the people up. We have to let them stand on platforms that if they are going to win, they got to answer the phone, be open on time, like Al said, provide high quality food and vegetable and whatever it is, whatever they do, high quality products. And treat the customers like their dollars matter, no matter where their dollars come from. And even in Milwaukee, if you look at it, there are a lot of businesses, a lot of people are moving in different parts of Milwaukee County and other counties surrounding Milwaukee County. Those people are still, they're bringing their money into your community, wherever your community is. It could be Oak Creek, whatever, right? Let's continue to talk about this. When we come back, we'll be back in 3 minutes. We're just going to go off. Yes. I'm your host, Manon Sabir, the Grapevine, and you're on the award-winning The Truth 101.7 Radio. Welcome back. We're picking some more grapes. We're talking about black-owned businesses, and should you really name your name, your business a black-owned business? Should you really name your business a black-owned business? Like, hey, I got a black-owned business. I had a black-owned business. A couple of them. I didn't name it a black-owned business. Because I wanted everybody's dollar. It didn't have to be a black-owned business. You saw my face. You saw it. But it didn't have to be a black-owned business. I didn't, you know, as much as it's funny, because there are a lot of owners of black-owned businesses that I know that don't even want to be don't even want their face associated with the business. And a lot of them It's almost like an untold rule of thumb to black-owned business owners to put their face forward, but in reality, majority of them don't want to do it when they get into it because there's so many issues along with associating your face with your business. You don't see Ray Kroc. You don't see Ray Kroc's face on his business. Wendy's, you see Wendy, but Wendy was Wendy's daughter. You see the Colonel. Colonel was, you know, I think he did that because he looked real unique. But I don't even know, was he really a Colonel? I mean, or whatever, right? McDonald's, you see Ronald McDonald. So a lot of people aren't putting that foot forward. What they're doing is they're talking about the economics of running a business. They want to run their business like a business rather than put the name black-owned business on there, because it does separate us from everyone else. Now, is it unique? Is it unique to have that moniker? I believe so. 100,000%, because there are some subtleties in that we, if you do have that black-owned moniker, that will help you. Like you can get certain scholarships, grants, you name it, whatever it is. certain certifications with that particular moniker. But I'm of the contention that you don't have to do it. But when you do, make sure you take advantage of it. Make sure you take full, complete advantage of it. Full, complete advantage of it. You don't want the handouts. You want to be able to work for those things that moniker gives you. Security Mike. Oh man. What's up, Security Mike? We're gonna go to the chat in a minute.
How you doing, young man?
Doing good. What's up, my brother?
I agree with you on that because I just got a business.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna put it out there black owned and operated, because when we in the hood or whatever, we go in the store like that, we're gonna know. We're gonna know because I patronize black owned and operated business.
Yeah.
We don't have too many of them.
Yep.
But I wouldn't put it out there like that because you can attract anybody and everybody of all cultures.
Right.
I feel like a racist white person walk up, if they already know that it's black owned and operated, they're not gonna patronize.
Right.
But if they don't know that, they'll stumble on up in there and find something they like.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't put it out there because how we living now. Trump brought out all the rates, brought them all out the closet. Mm-hmm. But if they don't know it's a black-owned and operated business, they're going to patronize.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work, man.
Man, I appreciate it. Thank you, Mike. Yeah. So, and there's a few sides to this. I recognize all sides, but I do know that if I was in, and this is very segregated Milwaukee, this is very segregated Milwaukee County, this is very segregated Wisconsin. The moment I put black-owned business in my charter, in my mission, in my vision, and I name it that, there's no problem with that. However, if you lead with that, especially if you're in a space of, in this segregated space, man, you can detract, you can attract people who are detractors. But I want to hear what y'all had to say, man. Maybe you can change my mind. I don't know. Paul, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Doing good. What's up, Paul?
You know, what's most important is not what color the owner is. It's the quality of your products and the quality of your service.
Right.
That should speak for you.
That's right.
And if you focus on those two things with consistency, you should have some success.
That's right.
And you know what? That's what our folks lack a lot of the times.
Mm.
You know, sometimes that's the difference in what McDonald's I go to. Because I know one, they act professional, and on another one, they all got on different clothes, somebody sagging, hair ain't combed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not going back there.
Right.
So if they be consistent with quality products and quality service, they should have some success.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Man, Paul, I appreciate it. Yeah, and I think everybody is of the contention that if you have a business that is black owned, quality over moniker wins every time. Quality over who owns the business wins every time. For example, if you got a sign, I went to this business and I'm not gonna say which culture of business that owns it. But it was of a Far East culture. And the gentleman had a great sign out front. Like before you entered, it was a brand new building, great sign out front. We walk in and it was boxes everywhere. You know, he's been in this business probably like 3 or 4 years. I think 4 years at when I entered the business. And I entered it with my daughter, and we go in, and he comes out the back. He's clean. Tell he's a clean guy, but it was just boxes everywhere stacked in different places. And he just didn't have quality organization. And there I knew that he was he didn't have the support nor the resources and also he was a little lazy in relationship to how he wanted to run his business. Nice, very nice guy. But man, I wish he had more push to organize that business. For real. Quality is what I hear. If we go to the chat. LeRon Taylor says nutritional food or healthier food has always been more expensive than junk. You cannot regulate people who can't afford it to eat healthy. You cannot regulate healthy food at schools, then ask more. I feel that. Rose, the young lioness, sir, how do we support our brothers? This is when you go to them about a mistake that was made with their food, and they don't give a damn. How do I patronize that kind of person? It's really hard. It's really hard to patronize those people who don't give a dang about you know, the mistake. Don't give a dang about the quality of the food. It's hard. I think you approach them, you talk to them. You even offer your support. You offer your support like, hey, this is what I do. You know, can I come? In a lot of business owners may not do this, but I know that if I had people in hindsight is 2020, if I was in this position, if I had people who would volunteer, just come in and volunteer, man, that would make a world of a difference. Hey, y'all, we're going to come back. I think we're going to continue this conversation. I like this conversation. Really like this conversation about Black-owned business. We got some more conversation about this. We're going to take some more calls. We're going to ask people to hang in there on the YouTube chat. We'll see what we got. We'll be back on the Grapevine on the award-winning The Truth, 101.7 Radio in 3.